Hey, welcome back, everybody. Time again to meet our community, the Hispanic business community here in Orange County, powered by the Orange County Hispanic Chamber of Commerce, with the man who powers through these things like so effortlessly. He just powers through the community. He knows everybody, John Gutierrez.
Hey, everybody. Welcome again to our community podcast show, powered by the Orange County Hispanic Chamber of Commerce. I'm your host, Senior Vice President John Gutierrez. And with us today, we have another special guest with us today. It's Pamina Barco, and she's the founder and CEO of Pamina Barco Enterprises, South Star Medical Consultants. She's a trustee at the University here of California, Irvine, and a longtime civic leader focused on expanding opportunity and access to education and healthcare for underserved communities. She is the first Latina trustee for the University of Irvine, ESO, and she's the co-chair of the OC Alliance, a community coalition supporting Latino and underserved students connected to UC Irvine. Welcome, Pamina.
Hi, John.
And I want to make sure I say that, Pamina.
Pamina.
And I have to say that we recently ran into each other again at the OC Alliance 5-year anniversary.
Yeah.
Beautiful event, amazing event. Thank you for the invite, by the way. And we're going to get into all that. We're going to get into what is the OC Alliance, an amazing organization, committee.
Yeah.
We'll get into all that. But first and foremost, as many of our viewers and listeners know, we like to get to know our special guest. And if you can share with us a little bit about yourself, where you were maybe born and raised, and how we got to this point in your career.
Sure. So I'm originally from Chile. I was born in a little town called Chillán, which is maybe 10 hours south of Santiago. It's mid-southern region of the country. I was born during a time of Pinochet, so during the time of dictatorship in Chile.
Oh, wow.
I was like 8.5 years old when I moved to the United States with my parents. They were looking for opportunity beyond the dictatorship. At that time, we weren't sure how long it was going to last.
What is that, the dictatorship? For those people listening or viewing that don't know what that's like.
So we had a military dictatorship for many years. That means that we had elected a government, and this is long before I was born, and they were overthrown by a military government, meaning our own military overthrew the government we had elected. And so then they had a general, Augusto Pinochet, and he then came into power for many decades. And it was, that means you don't have free elections. That means you see military walking on the street. So essentially the military becomes that general's, or in this case, he became president, the president's vehicle by which they're able to control society, make rules of society, do as they please. And so they rule the country in essence. And that means that they come on top of the Constitution, on top of elections. Oh. I grew up and was born into that.
Wow. What was that like for you growing up? I know there's some good stories that I've heard of how you and your, I think it's your mother, you guys used to go to the river, right? And wash clothes or something like that.
Absolutely. I was born into pretty poor circumstances in the sense that the streets were unpaved where I was born. Absolutely. We grew up washing our clothes in the river. There were times when my parents would even forage for food. But I think that's all even separate from the dictatorship question that you brought up, because that is a society of silence. You're born knowing that you shouldn't say certain things, that certain things can't be brought up, that certain books can't be read, that certain things
censorship,
can't be voiced.
Right?
Censorship. And I think it gets internalized in that kind of a society when you grow up with, like, your voice not fully evolved. It's been a passion of mine to look for my voice, because I was definitely born into a country in which our voice was stifled.
It's interesting you bring that up, because for those of us that are also viewing and listening, a lot of our youth chamber listens and views, this is why political science in the universities and colleges, it's a great course or class, because that's some of the stuff you talk about in these classes about censorship, right?
Yeah.
That must have been tough. That must have been tough for you guys growing up. So you're growing up in Chile, and where about that time would you say you started thinking, hey, I want to grow up to be something in life? And what changed in your perspective growing up as a young leader in your community?
It's interesting, because when you grow up in that kind of community, I think you either ease into it or you think, is there something beyond this? Mm. And I think in the back of my head, I always thought, this isn't the life I want. It feels constrained. how do I grow beyond this? And at the time I was young and I played piano and I thought maybe I can be a concert pianist so I can travel the world and do something. As you do when you're a kid, you've got these big dreams. So even back then I was dreaming of what can I do with my career that will take me beyond. I couldn't have dreamt the life I've had, but I think imagination is essential in young ones because it leads to who am I? What is it that I'm trying to do in life? And in life I knew I wanted more.
Your mother, father, the ones that got you into piano? Like, how did you end up? Because piano's it's a big thing, right?
Big thing. My grandparents had a piano. We stayed in their home. My dad came here for a couple years to get a green card. So he came over for work, and we stayed with my grandparents, and they had a piano in their living room. They had a little, like, two-bedroom, tiny home, and they were in one bedroom, and my mom and my siblings and I were in the other. And they had this piano, and I was, like, trying to play it. And so finally, we didn't have a lot of money, but they said, hey, how about if we get you some classes? And I think that was my, like, a spark of creativity from when I was young. I'm very blessed that they supported the arts.
It's interesting because we're going to have on the show Paul from the Segerstrom Center, the famous orchestra. I'm drawing him. And he talked about this.
You're talking about the conductor of the Pacific Symphony?
Yes, Pacific Symphony. I'm sorry. Yes. He talked about the other day we were at an event how music played such a huge role in his life as far as opening his eyes and his mind into what some of the things he wanted to do in
very
life.
Very cool. Are you talking about the Pops conductor?
Yes.
The young guy
who's
Hispanic and does all these crazy combinations. He had Arturo Sandoval there a year ago, and he does really, he had a disco show. He had all sorts of, he's really trying to make symphony accessible
Enrique
to
Lopez Yanes. He's going to be on our podcast, and he talked about all this, how music really helped shape who he was. So that's great that your grandparents opened your eyes.
It's universe. That's across every category, every country. Music can open doors and open your
eyes.
Did
you continue to play the piano as you?
Absolutely. My name comes from an opera by Mozart. And so I grew up in a family where music was very valued. And so my father taught me for years and years until I
should
was
we get,
14.
We have a little electronic piano in the other room. We can bring it over here.
She's way out of practice. Thank you.
No pressure. So you're growing up playing the piano, and at what point does your father say to your family, hey, let's come to the U.S., or how does that happen?
He was given a job opportunity here, and when you do that, you come over on a work visa, and he said, hey, let me try to go over there and get you guys a visa, and we thought it'd be quick, but it ended up being a bit over 2 years of him being here. That's how we stay with my grandparents while he tried to figure out that visa situation, but eventually he did get it.
Nice.
And so when I was a bit over 8 years, we moved here to Southern California. I've been here since.
And what was his?
He was a sound engineer.
Oh, okay. And so you come to Southern California. What was that like? That must have been so different.
What a culture clash.
Yes, yes. Was that quite the challenge for you, the adjustment, the culture shock maybe?
Yeah, I didn't know the language. This is not a dictatorship. The food was completely different. You guys have like sesame seeds on your hamburger buns. Everything was different. The food was different. Other people that spoke
sesame
Spanish.
Sesame seeds on our buns. I never thought of that as a big difference here.
I was like, what are these people doing? Yeah. Like, why are you messing up my hamburger bun? Everything was different.
And how old were you then?
A little over 8.
Okay, so you're still pretty young.
Yeah, 8 and a half.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So that was like elementary school still.
Exactly.
Yeah, third grade or something? Second grade? Okay.
Yeah, I redid that in the second grade.
So where did you grow up in Southern California?
First, San Clemente for many years, and then we moved to Corundel Mar, and then we sort of moved around all over Orange County.
Nice. So this is your hometown,
home
area.
This is my home, truly.
And you ended up going eventually to UCI?
Yes. My undergraduate, it was interesting. I considered going to a variety of different colleges, got into different colleges, actually accepted a UCLA entrance, and then decided to stay here.
There you go.
My parents were going through a divorce. I wanted to stay near my siblings and my family, being the Latina I am, and I'm so grateful that I did, because going to college, you build community. Even if you don't know it, but you are. This is where I live. This is where my community is. So I don't regret it for a minute, and I've come back to UCI multiple times for degrees because this is where my life is, and so I've gotten intimately, like, really involved at UCI because I realized they played such a big role in my life and throughout so many decades.
And at what point did you say, I'm going to be an entrepreneur?
So I think that was, let me see, I was maybe 25 years old, and I was thinking about what to do, and I was in grad school, and And like the paths were so set. At that point, I was doing Spanish literature. And I was like, oh, I can either be a professor or I can be a consultant. And I wasn't like loving any of those paths. And I think that's when I leapt. And I went and worked for like a real estate, like a international like marketing firm. And it opened my eyes to business. Oh. And after that, forget it.
Because like you fell in love with business?
I fell in love with business.
Like, interesting. You went from being a professor mindset to suddenly, I want to be a businesswoman.
Yeah. I was like, where has this been? I didn't know I could do this. I didn't know I could just make up a job.
Wow.
And so I went and worked for a couple of firms that did like international, like real estate, where finally I got to run the Latin American division. And that was so neat because I was traveling and exploring. What does business look like? What does expansion look like? And after that, I leapt on my own and I haven't looked back.
Now, I know you're big about mentorship, right? We're going to talk about the OC Alliance and all that. Where in your life would you say you had a mentor or mentors that impacted you?
I think this is one of the most important topics, John. Since I was in junior high, I've always had at least one mentor next to me. I've been so lucky to reach out to my teachers, to reach out to others who will help. I've never been at a period where I didn't reach out to a mentor or two or three. To this day, I have my group of mentors that I go to because they've been there. They've done that. And it feels, hey, if I don't know how to get through something, it's great to have somebody to be able to turn to and ask. I'm blessed now because I'm middle-aged, so I also get to be a mentor. I get to be mentored, and I get to be a mentor. So it's a beautiful time in life where I get to be part of that cycle. But I see some people that are like too scared to reach out and say, hey, I've got a question, or can we grab a cup of tea, or can I pick your brain on something? But don't, because most of us that have done anything, we've done it because people advise us along the way on how to get here. And so I think a lot of us are pay it back constantly.
It's interesting you say that because obviously we're on the Orange County Hispanic Chamber of Commerce community podcast show. But I was just talking to somebody about this yesterday. I get calls all the time about people saying, do you know somebody that does this? Do you know somebody that does that? And that's really what a chamber is, right? We're here to be a resource. Obviously, we advocate for businesses and we support a lot of educational things like our youth chamber program that we have, mentorship program. But for you as a businesswoman, I know you eventually were the CEO and, of course, Pamina Barco Enterprises. Is that when you started your clinics? Or I know with your husband at the time, you were running these clinics. Is that where the businesswoman took off?
Yeah, the business sort of took off when I met my late husband.
And what was the business? I know somebody tweeted in, what was the business?
So he was a pain management physician, and I was a clinical nutritionist at the time. And I was already doing entrepreneurial stuff where I had clients because I'm a chef too. And so I had Pamina's Kitchen, and he had just left pain management clinics that he had some partners at, and he had just left. And when he left, he was like, we should start something. And so we started pain management clinics, and then we incorporated nutrition into it. And so we started Orange County Pain Management Clinics. That was the name of the company, Orange County Pain Management.
That's great.
And we did something that today is called like integrative medicine, where we had traditional Western medicine. And then because of my nutritional background, we would consider people's lifestyles. We'd take their blood work, we'd counsel them on nutrition, other things that were impacting their pain beyond just the location where things were hurting. And interestingly, this is 20 years ago, it started to grow. And as it started to grow in scale, so did my entrepreneurial spirit, if you will.
Interesting. Yeah. That's interesting you say that because we see and hear that more today, right?
Yeah.
Like myself, I've had to deal with pre-diabetes, so I had to get in a very strict diet coming out of the pandemic. And now I look back and I'm like, I enjoy drinking so many hot teas because one of our mutual friends, Dr. Trin, yes.
Big into integrative medicine, big into alternative ideas.
Yeah, he's the medical director for Alzheimer's Association.
He's that. He runs some.
But he was the one that told me, John, you want to lose some weight?
Yeah.
You know, in our culture, we drink a lot of hot tea. Yeah. And I was like, as a kid, my mom would always give me hot tea. And I was like, oh, I don't want to drink that. But I saw how much it helped me lose weight, balance my gut and everything that I was dealing with. I drink two or three teas a day now.
Good for you.
Now I'm getting my sons into drinking hot tea. So it's interesting how you got the Western medicine mentality and then you've got the, right? If you think about it, you coming from Chile.
Yes.
Like you growing up as a little girl, I'm sure there was things that your parents integrated into you Very much back then, right?
I always think of my grandmother's cocina, her kitchen. It's like when you eat the right foods, when you go out and, first of all, when you're poor, you're actually eating from the land directly a lot, and where it was at the time in Chile. So I was very used to eating whole foods all the time.
Yes.
It's no surprise. Nutrition to me was just an extension of why aren't we eating the right vegetables, the right actual real foods. And so to me, health is all getting back to that. In some ways, convenience has shortcutted that. So putting that idea together with pain management, and then as we expanded other things, you know, orthopedic surgery, neurosurgery, neurology, it was all unnatural to think of the human as a whole being, not just one part of them. And we weren't doing this as some gimmick at the time. We truly believed it and lived it. And this is 20 years ago when it was innovative. So those clinics grew rapidly. That's when I went back, got my MBA, because at that point, you're not just entrepreneuring. You need a structure by which you can do that to scale correctly. My love of entrepreneurship, I took it to the next level because it's like when your passion starts to make you money, then you're like, hey, what's next? What's next is you got to learn the business chops so you can scale it, grow it, and know what to do with it.
I love what you just said. It just reminded me a lot of when I was growing up when you said, when you are poor, you eat from the land.
Yeah.
It's almost like a book you can write because I
like that.
I go back into my old neighborhood where I grew up. And all the plants, my dad was a landscape worker, but all the plants that my dad planted are all still there. So my dad had asno tree, an orange tree. He has all these, and he used to grow calabazas, and he used to, so it's funny how you say that, but that was when we were kids and we're considered low income in Santa Ana as kids. Right. And I look back now and today that's considered like, you're healthy, you're organic. You know what I mean? Like it's all the good things that are expensive now.
That's right.
So it's
true. When we were kids, that's actually what was cheap. Your family's poor if you're doing that because you're not eating out. You're actually cooking at home. You're chopping things. But it means all of us who grew up under those circumstances have that skill set of, I know how to chop. I'm not afraid of bugs. I do grow my own lettuce, of course.
Wow. So you feel like you got a lot from your grandma, huh?
Yeah, my grandma and even my grandpa. We'd go to the farmer's market every day to pick out fresh produce.
Awesome.
Some of my family also farmland and like those kinds of people, like where we grew up, our own trees, our own vegetables. And so like, I feel a complete connection to the land.
That is awesome. I want to share with everybody, tell us a little bit about, of course, the OC Alliance group that you guys have. I know it's a 5-year anniversary just happened.
Yeah.
Can you share with everybody about what it is and what you all do?
Absolutely. So this is a group that was put together, like you said, 5 years ago, and it's a group of, I'd say, business leaders, many of us Latino, not all of them. And the intent was to say, hey, UCI, the university, is a Hispanic-serving institution, which is an interesting and rare designation. It means that at least 25% of our student body is Latino. And we were saying, what are you guys doing to ensure that these Latino students are having a smooth transition? Mm. And the reason I say that is because as a group, they had the hardest time graduating. They had the hardest time staying in there once we were accepting them. And we said, why? So this group of leaders got together and say, how do we support this really important group of students who many of them first generation, many of them underserved? Like we need to have enough resources for them and they need to have advocacy at the highest levels of the university. And that's going to be us. And so to this day, we get to sit with the chancellor and other people and advocate. We have people from our group on every single dean's advisory board, for example, so that,
that
we can advocate and say, hey, what are you doing for these students, for your lower income students, for first generation students? Or do you have enough groups for them? Do you have enough support for them? Do we have enough resources? Can we raise funds for scholarships for students that truly need it during the pandemic or whatever it is? We're here to make sure that these students are seen, held, and stewarded. And so we're celebrating 5 years of this group coming together. We keep ourselves small on purpose because that way we can organize really well.
I have to tell you, I was at the 5-year anniversary event last week. Is that what it was? And let me tell you, it was a beautiful event to see the group in the room, all the leaders, all the deans that were there, just the presidents, right? The president was there.
Yeah, the chancellor was there.
Chancellor was there. Just the group
provost.
You guys had, And then the students that are part of the program that you're supporting and helping, the young man that went up there and did that speech. Wow.
Yeah.
It was just a speech. And then the story of the young lady who's going to be a nurse. Yeah. It was just very inspiring. But for me as a Latino entrepreneur, obviously vice president of the Hispanic Chamber, it was a very proud moment to see that different people of different races and colors and genders, everybody was in that room for the right cause.
That's right.
For a good reason. And that was very touching. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think.
So kudos to you guys.
Thank you. Yes. You know, when I went to college, there weren't people that looked like me very many.
Exactly.
College. Like I said, a lot of us didn't finish. A lot of us didn't go to graduate school. Yeah. And now it's beautiful to see how far we've come. But now we've got to open up the door for the rest. There's a lot of younger people behind us, and it's our job to facilitate that. So it was a beautiful room full of really powerful leaders. It's amazing, actually, to get that caliber of leaders all in one room. I know you and I both know how hard it is to get just a few leaders in a room, but that many leaders in one room at once is a powerful thing. And that's how we have such a strong voice.
Yeah. While we were there and the young man was doing his speech, he was thanking different people. And it was interesting. He thanked John Amador, who's our chairman, former chairman of our board, who was standing right behind me. And I thought that was just really nice to hear him thank his mentors or people that helped him out. Because again, back to your point, these young leaders that are coming up in our world, I look at them as the leaders that are going to be around my sons.
That's right.
Are being mentored and guided by a great group like the OC Alliance. Yeah. What's the future? What's next? What do you guys foresee in this organization, this group?
What's next is the Latinos are soon, and we're becoming the majority, and yet we're still not the majority in leadership. We're still not the majority in entrepreneurs. So we have to open up doors, like create pathways, mentor, create financial ability for all of anybody who needs to, but especially first generation and disadvantaged students, to be able to walk that pathway so that people can have a real future. They can create businesses. They can be successful entrepreneurs. They can create jobs for others. They too can open doors. Like, our society can only thrive if we help them thrive.
Yeah. And to add to that point, you're the first Latina trustee at UCI. Good job.
Thank you.
Felicidades. What was that like for you? Or what's it been like to be in that role?
It's been amazing. I really have to thank Julie Hill when she had this view of the trustees as we need to have representation. And they had let in some Latinos for the first time, like Ruben Smith and other friends that we have.
Ruben Smith, who's on our advisory board.
And so it was great because then they in turn helped to open the door for me. And now I get to be a voice in there that says, hey, have we thought about this group? And not just Latinos, but other minorities are underserved. And so it's beautiful now. I think the more of us there are, the better, because we can be a united voice. Once again, we can be advocates, we can open doors. And more than anything, it's wonderful to see more of us in leadership as a whole.
Paul has a question. Go ahead,
Quick question. Yeah? For those of us that don't know, or the youth chamber listening, or just the general audience, what does a trustee do? I know it has an oversight role.
I was going to ask that question, actually.
I really don't know what a trustee does.
Yes, what does a trustee do, if you don't mind sharing with
us? No, I don't. Yes. Okay, so there's a number of different things that we do. The main thing is that we run the foundation. So a lot of the funds, like when you write a donation check to a university, it goes into their foundation.
Okay.
So it doesn't just go to pay that professor.
Okay.
The funds, there's funds that they have for their general budget, and then any donations go into the foundation. So we run that, let's call it that pot of money. And so we invest it, we can send it out into the university as need be. And then all of us have basically committed to play an important role in the university. So most of us sit on dean's advisory boards. We're oftentimes sitting with higher administration, giving our thoughts about things. We hold an offsite once a year where all the trustees come together, and it's our time to have a complete dialogue with the deans, the chancellor, the provost, the vice chancellors, and say, what is the direction that we're going in? What is it that we're doing? Where are we going? And so we're the ones that get to start the conversation that hopefully trickles out into the university, and we get to advocate for the things that we're passionate about. Yes, there's a stewardship component, I would say. Most of us got there because we were passionate about society to begin with, and we were really active in it. And so they went out and handpicked us. So you're not taking individuals that are just passively sitting around. We were all already very actively involved and already leaders. And then from there, they handpick you to come in and be part of a group that helps steer.
There you go, Paul. Wow.
And how many trustees roughly are there?
There's about 65 trustees right now.
Oh, wow. Yeah. I think that's awesome, because at the end of the day, you said it perfectly. You need representation.
Yes.
You need to be, what is that old saying? Be at the table.
Right.
Be invited to the table.
Yes.
And so the fact that you're the first Latina trustee at UCI says a lot, right? You've, you know, young girl from Chile.
Yeah.
Whose dad worked very hard, I'm sure, to come to this country and open doors for you and your family. And so kudos to your parents. We want to thank you for being on the show.
Thanks for having me.
And continue to do everything you're doing in our community. For anybody listening or viewing us, anytime you can support the OC Alliance, it's a great group of leaders doing some great things here at UCI. And if anybody wants to learn more about it, they can probably go on social media and Google
Absolutely.
OC Alliance, right?
Yeah.
And see everything they're doing if they wish to support them. I know almost every kid's parent want them to go to UCI. Everybody I talk to.
Yeah.
And UCI is one of those tough schools to get into, but
it is.
But it's
true.
A great community.
Yes. We're a hub of Orange County, and mm-hmm. I think we're going to continue investing in being that hub, whether it's culturally or educationally. Like, it's important that we invest not just in the students that go there, but in the whole community around us.
And the growth of UCI is phenomenal.
Yes.
The size of it, the program, its ranking, and yes. everything else here. We do a show for UCI Law School. It's one of the top, I think, 30
That's
or 40
right.
law schools in the country.
Yes.
Yeah.
I just saw
and
he was
new.
Speaking, right, somewhere the other day.
Austin, yeah.
At Hoke, he was speaking, I think, the law.
And you see, here we are at yeah. UCI, their Applied Innovation Center, which is this halfway house between yeah. the university and the real world, mm-hmm. where they bring businesses and academic research together and try and create businesses and companies out of it here.
I mean, the time has run out, but we want to thank you and appreciate you coming on the show.
I want to know what Mozart opera, was it an opera?
Yeah, it's an opera called The Magic Flute.
Because Mozart didn't write many operas, did he?
No, he actually did not like traditional Italian.
I didn't think so. Yeah.
He detested them. So this is an opera called The Magic Flute. It's a really
interesting...
Oh, that's
a famous one, yeah.
Yeah, it's an interesting libretto because it's a quirky opera, and that's the sort
libretto
of thing Mozart
the book
was...
about it, the whole the story of it.
Yeah, Mozart was drawn to...
John's looking at me like, what?
No, hey.
Librettos. Yeah.
Hey, I love music, and I think that plays a huge role in our society. My son loves playing the guitar. I'm trying to get him to get into more different stuff like that, too. But thank you for being on the show.
Absolutely.
And obviously, as the Orange County Hispanic Chamber of Commerce, we're glad that we're here at UCI. Alberto is one of our, of course, board members, incoming chair, Sandoval. And
yeah.
so, again, thank you, UCI, for everything you're doing, and wish you all the best.
Thanks, John. Thanks for having me.
Awesome. There you have it, folks, where our community is your community. Thank you for listening and tuning in to our Hispanic Chamber of Commerce podcast show. We'll see you guys next week.
There you have it. One more reason to tune in each and every time to meet the members of our community. Brought to you by the Orange County Hispanic Community Chamber and Orange County's only community conversation, OC Talk Radio, streaming live from our studios here at the University of California, Irvine's Beale Applied Innovation Center.